From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for listening today. Juneau police say DNA has identified human remains found in the Gatineau Channel more than 20 years ago. The state medical examiner's office confirmed they are the remains of Daryl Bruce Fawcett, who's been missing since 1999. Fawcett was homeless in Juneau when he stopped contacting his family in September of 1999, according to the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System, or NAMUS. In 2004, a diver found human remains 83 feet underwater near Juneau's downtown cruise docks and the Merchant's Wharf, according to a JPD release. The remains have been sent to the state medical examiner's office since. The release says that in July, the medical examiner's office began using new technology that can extract DNA profiles from bones and teeth. NAMUS shows four other sets of unidentified human remains found in Juneau between 2001 and 2017. Fawcett was 28 years old when he was reported missing. Police say his family has been notified. And lawmakers are headed to Juneau for the special legislative session called by Governor Mike Dunleavy, which begins Saturday. On the agenda are several education policy proposals and an executive order to create a State Department of Agriculture. Lawmakers from the House and Senate's bipartisan majority caucuses say they plan to vote on whether to override Dunleavy's veto of over $50 million in education funding and immediately adjourn the session. Educators and education advocates are hopeful that legislators will vote Saturday to override Dunleavy's education funding veto. They need 45 lawmakers to vote yes to restore the full $700 increase to the base student allocation, the state's formula for funding schools that passed the legislature. Dunleavy called the special session earlier this month, but asked Republican lawmakers not to attend during the first 5 days when the legislature is required to take up a veto overrides. But in a video posted to social media on Tuesday, Dunleavy invited all legislators to be there. The Juneau Police Department has placed an officer on administrative leave following a violent arrest on Wednesday that led to a man being medevaced out of town for a head injury. City and tribal officials have expressed concern about the incident after a witness posted a video online, but that witness said he felt protected by the officer's actions. Juneau City Manager Katie Kester released a statement on Friday to share the city's response to the incident and public outcry that has followed. She said the city acknowledges the, quote, deep community concern over the incident and is taking steps to review the department's policies and procedures. According to Kester, the Juneau Police Department has requested an independent investigation by an external agency to review the use of force by the officer. Following the investigation, the state's Office of Special Prosecutions will then review the case to determine if the officer was justified in his response. Kester says the city will also conduct an internal investigation of the case to examine the incident and whether the officer's actions align with the department's current policy. Body camera footage of the incident will be released to the public within 30 days. Police have not named the officer or the injured man, nor have they shared his current condition. According to the department, the incident took place after officers responded to a report of a woman fighting with a man outside of the Douglas Library. Police say the woman threw water in the man's face and made racial comments. According to the department, an officer was attempting to place her under arrest and into a vehicle when a friend of hers appeared and continued to yell at the man. Police say the man then aggressively approached an officer. Police say the officer attempted to place the man under arrest and into handcuffs, but he resisted and was, quote, taken to the ground. Ivan Bailey was the man initially harassed by the woman and who recorded the video of the incident that has circulated online. He said he was surprised by the community reaction to the video and said he felt protected by the officer's actions.
The officer was able to respond in the manner and the quickness in which he did, in what I can only describe as the most professional manner given the circumstance.
The Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, based in Juneau, has also responded to the video with a statement. In a social media post, President Chahi'ish Richard Peterson said the tribe is, quote, deeply concerned about the incident, which he said involved a tribal citizen. He said the level of force used during the arrest raised serious questions and asked the mayor and police chief for several actions, including a meeting with tribal leadership and an independent review of the incident. In the trial against former Juneau chiropractor Jeffrey Foltz, who's accused of assaulting more than a dozen women under the guise of medical care, is underway. We break down the first few days of the trial with KTO reporter Clarice Larson. And a warning, the story contains details of alleged sexual assault and trauma.
Where are we at in the trial right now?
So jury selection took about 2 weeks, and then opening statements were on Tuesday. So the trial is really in full force now. That means we're starting to hear from expert witnesses and alleged victims. And this will be the bulk of the next 2 weeks as well. Both the state prosecutor and Jeffrey Foltz's defense team will be using these witnesses to try and establish their side of the story.
Okay, so tell me more about the opposing sides. What did the attorney say during opening statements?
The state is arguing that Foltz used his position as a medical provider in South... at Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium to gain access to vulnerable women and assault them when they sought medical care. This is State Prosecutor Jesslyn Gillum.
We are here because the defendant engaged in sexual contact with his patients under the guise of legitimate medical treatment. He violated their trust and he violated their bodies.
The state points to repeated testimony from witnesses who say Fultz touched them in a sexualized way in insensitive places without reason or consent, and that he denied them appropriate coverings during treatment. The defense team argues that Fultz was giving appropriate medical treatment and that the women who accused him didn't express their discomfort at the time. Here's defense attorney Wally Tetlow.
The evidence in the case is going to show that during legitimate medical treatment, Dr. Fultz did make contact with sensitive areas of the body, but he did not make any contact with sensitive areas of the body without consent.
He also said that Officer Daniel Darbon, a former investigator for this case who died in 2023, led the women to the conclusion that they were assaulted.
Okay, so who have we heard from since those opening statements?
So Tuesday and Wednesday, we heard from Dr. James Lehman, an expert witness called by the state. He's a doctor and a professor at the University of Bridgeport School of Chiropractic. Attorneys asked him about a whole lot of specific medical treatments. Remember, this is a case about medical treatment and whether it was appropriate or abuse. The state asked Dr. Lehman about what areas are appropriate to touch based on what treatment the women accusing Fultz requested.
Are you aware of any legitimate chiropractic or any legitimate chiropractic treatment that requires a practitioner to make direct contact with the breast or vulva of a patient who comes in complaining of generalized back pain?
No.
This went on for about 2 minutes as the prosecutor asked about other medical conditions the women sought treatment for. The answer was always no. In the cross-examination, the defense showed Dr. Lehman charts that show that tension in muscles and tissue in the chest area can impact muscles down the arms, and that treating the chest area can be appropriate for treating other pain elsewhere in the body. The state then asked Dr. Lehman about informed consent, something the women claimed Fultz did not do before touching sensitive areas.
You explain to the patient what you're going to do, why you're going to do it, and what they should expect the outcome to be. Make certain that they understand it and they approve of your proceeding.
And I know witnesses and alleged victims were expected to speak this week. Has that happened?
Yes. Wednesday and Thursday, we heard from Christina Love. The court is now using alleged victims' full names, but we're only using ones who've given us permission. Love has given us that permission to use her full name. She testified about how her experiences with Fultz got progressively more uncomfortable and how different they were from other search providers she saw. Love said initially things were comfortable, but his behavior started to change after a few years. He walked in on her changing. He gave her a covering that was too small. He began to touch her in places she wasn't comfortable with, without permission, and moved her hands away when she tried to cover those areas. She began requesting other providers, but would only get scheduled with Fultz, who she understood to be in charge of appointments. And the weird behavior only escalated.
I trusted him. I was so mad and betrayed. I also felt betrayed by myself that I should have known.
Love reported it to Aware, who called JPD, and from there, the criminal investigation into Fultz began. Her testimony dug into that process as well. Fultz's attorney, James Christie, questioned Love next. He asked about her previous testimony earlier in the case and questioned her memory. He also pointed out her lack of experience with medical treatment.
We can agree that you have no training as a chiropractor, correct?
He argued that her testimony has changed throughout official proceedings and asked about Detective Darbon guiding or leading her to the conclusion that she was assaulted.
Okay, so what do you expect the rest of the trial to look like?
It'll be more of what we saw this week. The prosecutor said we would hear from more of the women who have accused Fultz of similar behavior. And based on the defense's opening statements, I'm expecting the defense will call their own expert witnesses, too. All told, they're expecting to call dozens of witnesses to the stand. There are 2 more full weeks scheduled for this trial. That was KTLA's Clarice Larson asking about the status of the trial against former Juno chiropractor Jeffrey Fultz. And the federal government will be releasing billions of dollars in education funding that it withheld at the end of June. Part of that funding is the Title I-C funding for migrant education. A quarter of students in the Petersburg School District qualify for that money. Title I-C funds give migratory students the tools they need to succeed in school and graduate. Families can be considered migratory if they have to leave town to engage in their livelihood, like students and families who commercial or subsistence fish. Mara Latomsky is the administrative assistant for the district.
You're leaving your community to go out to catch fish for income, and then you move back to your hometown. So you're leaving your community to go and do work. Or we do have people that qualify that come into town to do the work.
She says that other migratory jobs in Petersburg include logging and agriculture. Families in these industries can then apply to be considered for migratory funding. Over 100 students in Petersburg qualify as migratory. In the past, these funds have paid for tutors, school supplies, special classroom fees, workforce training, paying for staff. The list goes on.
I think oftentimes people misinterpret those funds that they're being given funds to support their work, their migratory work. And the fund's not there to support their migratory work. It's to support them in their education, reaching graduation because of the work that they do often takes them out of the classroom.
Without that funding, the district would have had to stop migratory programs entirely. Superintendent Robin Taylor says the students would feel the impacts without that money.
There's no doubt that reduced funding impacts student success, because anytime you have a reduction in funds, as a district, we have to make decisions as to then how we best allocate the resources that we do have. And so any reduction impacts students in the classroom.
The Department of Education is expected to begin releasing the Title I-C funds this week. And it's currently sunny and 64 degrees here in Juneau. Tomorrow is expected to be sunny with a high of 66. This is KTOO.